Well, again, the scientist I spoke to who is the lead on the issue of these giant algae blobs on both sides of the border says that in the next decade specifically, he expects that unless we make changes, we will see blobs as big or bigger than the Prince Edward Island size one we saw 2 years ago. Our treatment plants are built to take out things that are harmful in our drinking water supply, but they were never designed with the sort of toxins that are possible from these giant algae blooms in mind.
Just looking at the picture, the graphic in the London Free Press article this morning, big green blob with a face, with teeth and an eye, one eye, not two eyes. This is the stuff of science fiction, and yet it is so, so real. We're talking about the environment this morning and what we're doing to our Great Lakes. Jonathan Scheer of the London Free Press sharing in the last half hour memories of the 60s when some of the rivers flowing into Lake Erie from Ohio were so polluted they would catch fire repeatedly. Now, I just want to give you a heads up on what's coming up in the next hour. It's also related very much to the environment. There's a play at the Western Fair Farmers Market this weekend called To Be or Not to Be. There's a young actress in that play who will join us in the next hour to talk about how our bees are dying by the millions. It's a genocide of bees. And even at 11 years old, this young lady, Claire Jones Fright, has some very specific thoughts on the issue.
It's a bit discouraging to think that people are actually like putting this this pesticide into the air and killing all these bees, and they're just, I mean, I'm a kid, right? But they're just innocent little bees. That's not the big part of it, though. But what it's going to affect our planet? Like, I think what the play is trying to explain is that it goes beyond just the bees. Like it affects our water supply and crops and so many vegetables and fruits, and that prevents cancer. So I think that we really need to think about that. And I think the good thing is that more people care about the environment than people who don't. So I think that's the good thing about it.
Well, that's the encouraging news. Oh, my. What a savvy young lady. I look forward to hearing from her in the next hour. So two major environmental stories this morning. And if you heard Jonathan Scheer in our last half hour or have read his article on the front page of the London Free Press this morning, I'm sure you'll want a second opinion. Is there somebody out there who could say, it's not really that serious. Don't worry about it. Well, let's go to Ingersoll, where Heather Gingrich, who's a medical geologist who's right up to snuff on this stuff, has some perspective for us. Good morning, Heather.
Good morning, Andy.
Please tell us all of this is exaggerated and we don't need to worry about it.
Can't do that. Sorry.
Oh, boy.
Yep. Sounds like Jonathan was sitting in on the same meetings as I was.
Wow.
Yep.
A blob in Lake Erie the size of PEI 2 years ago, and if we don't quickly take dramatic action to cut down on the phosphorus flowing into the lake from our farms and some of the nasty materials running into the lake from our cities, we've got trouble, Heather. What trouble?
Well, we've already got trouble. It's not that trouble is coming. It's that trouble is here. We now just have an explanation for it. We have a name for it. So I, as you mentioned in your intro, I'm a medical geologist. So I do environmental science and health sciences together. I'm bilingual. I do both. Now, Jonathan did an awesome job talking about sort of the environmental aspects, you know, where it's coming from, the microcystins toxins that get released by the blue-green algae. And then I pick it up from there and I say, okay, now what happens when you drink this water? And my area of expertise is mother-child health, particularly pregnant women and very small children, and drinking water chemistry. So I think that's where the big problem here is ever since Walkerton, all we have been told to care about are things like E. coli. And as long as you killed off the E. coli, you're good to go, right? Now, for me, Walkerton was a very significant time, but I think we totally missed the point because for me, E. coli is just the tip of the iceberg. The bigger problem is the chemicals. So it's the chemicals that are ending up in the water. And you can't kill chemicals because they're not alive by adding more chemicals, which is really all we do at our water treatment systems. Now, we do other things. I gotta put in a plug here for those people, those public servants who work at the water treatment plants. They are doing an excellent, excellent job. With the facilities that they have, using the technology that is available to them, these are the hardest working people on the public payroll we have. However, the people above them are not giving them good direction, good guidance. They're not measuring what matters. And that's not a decision that gets made at your water treatment plant. That's a decision that gets made in Toronto and Ottawa. And the public health people are totally flat-footed on this one, too. All they're testing for is E. coli and water. And I think the list is now 178 chemical parameters, which sounds really impressive until you understand that there are now hundreds of thousands, maybe millions of chemical compounds out there that can make us sick and that are, you know, destroying our environment. And we've got to really, really, really quickly change our strategies.
Heather, you say, and this is a frightening thought, this is not a problem in the future, even though the headline of the Free Press this morning says, welcome to our nightmare in waiting. You're saying right now, this is impacting our health.
Yep.
Right now, this is impacting the health of our children. Can you give us an example?
Okay, back in 2011, when we thought that the blob was as big as it ever was, like I said, it's just off the charts. I mean, the graphs are really scary. It said, you know, we had a little bit of this stuff, a little bit of microcystins, a little bit of blue-green algae, and then 2011 things went, there was no room on it for the graph. It just shot up. It tipped. It hit a tipping point, and it tipped. That same year, I was working with the midwives in the areas that serve the Lake Erie communities. And I was asking, so have you seen anything? And they said, have we ever? All of a sudden, we were seeing a lot of miscarriages, first trimester miscarriages, more than they had ever seen before. It was completely unprecedented, and they didn't know what was going on. They just knew that they were seeing a ton of miscarriages coming out of those communities that are getting their drinking water from Lake Erie. So I'm like, okay, let me look into that. And then I started looking for water chemistry data from, those communities. And like I said, I found, wow, you're looking for 178 chemicals that you're actually not likely to find. These 178 chemicals that we are looking for are not the ones that are going to be there because, of course, when a lot of these chemicals hit water, they change into another chemical or they bind with other little bits of other chemicals and they become something else that you're not looking for. And so while the water has been getting soupier and soupier in terms of all the chemicals that are in there, it's a very similar story to the bees, actually, and, you know, the chemicals that are in the air. So they are related. They're related stories. So this is a great show that you're having. You got to keep, you know, and you're saying, oh, don't worry, the water meets standards. The water's great because it has no E. coli. Well, what do your health statistics tell you? Well, your health statistics tell you that childhood cancers are not getting any better. They are on the rise. Miscarriages and pregnancy complications are on the rise. And what we're not doing is we're not doing the kind of chemical analysis that the Olympic drug doping squad would have done. You know, and they're just looking at everything. They're not saying, hey, we're not just looking for one or two performance-enhancing substances. We just want to see everything that's in here.
Okay, so let's look at the problems that you say are happening already. Let's make a list. You've mentioned childhood cancers.
Yep. Leukemia and leukemia, for the most part, and like central nervous system cancers, I believe there's Cancer Care Ontario and the Canadian Cancer Society put out great reports, and they will show you that. But then the other one, of course, that I'm concerned about is osteosarcoma, which is a bone cancer. That was the Terry Fox bone cancer.
Is there evidence, any evidence whatsoever, that because of the pollution in the water in Lake Erie, that is directly impacting the rates of childhood cancer?
Is there evidence? Yes, sure, the evidence is there, but only if you look at it and collect it. You know what I mean? So what we hear a lot of, and this drives me absolutely nuts, as a scientist and a consumer and as a mom is when they say, well, there's no evidence of harm that da-da-da-da is related to whatever disease you're looking at. What that is kind of code for, it's become code for, is that, you know what, we never studied it. And because we never studied it, that means there's no evidence. It doesn't mean that, you know what, we studied this intently and we looked at everything there was to look at. We left no stone unturned. And what we found is that, you know, it's this is not the cause. There is no correlation scientifically, statistically, with exposure to this chemical at this time in development for this length of time and this disease that happened later. Those studies are not being done.
Did you happen to see Brian Bicknell's report on CTV last night about cancer in a small community in southwestern Ontario where there have been a number of cancers in one small town?
I did not because I do not have a TV.
Okay, let's. I'm going to play you the report. This is Brian Bicknell last night. I'll play a portion of the report at least. And it all fits in with this theme of what we're doing to our planet, the pollution, and the direct link to cancer. Here we go.
It's a community of just a few dozen, but three people, all in different households, have been diagnosed with different types of terminal cancer, all within the last 3 months.
There's something just not right here.
Among them is David Anderson, who was diagnosed with stage 4 cancer in August and given 18 months to live.
Now they're saying he'll be lucky if he makes it to Thanksgiving weekend.
But the Andersons are convinced it must be more than just a coincidence. There has to be some explanation for this number of diagnoses in such a short period of time.
Three separate households right in a row, and one person out of each household is going to get hit with a bolt of lightning.
The Oxford County Health Unit has launched an investigation into the suspected cancer cluster.
We'll be focusing on environmental factors like air, soil, and water.
He admits it won't be easy.
We're dealing with a relatively few number of neighbors, but they are in a concentrated area.
The Andersons, meantime, aren't waiting. They plan to move as soon as they get the chance, but they'll be anxiously waiting for any answers.
We just want to protect somebody else from moving in here if it is environmental. And we can't have peace of mind until we know that it's not.
So there it is. Heather Gingrich on the line with us now. And Heather, that is right there, not far from where you are in Oxford County.
Yeah. Yeah. And you know what? Like we have the, you know, we could have the same story here in almost any community. The thing you have to understand is in the scientific community, like where does the money get spent? A lot of the money is being spent right now supporting research that's looking for some sort of genetic cause, a link of cancer in particular, because we have a lot of that now. Like I'm the only member of my family, like my mom, my dad, and my younger brother, who's still alive, who didn't die ridiculously young of cancer. And in the conclusion that I came to, because I'm a chemist, you know, I'm a biochemist, I'm a geochemist, I'm a medical geologist, I study this stuff, is it's not the genetics. I mean, yeah, genetics loads the gun, but environmental factors pull the trigger. You can't do anything about your genetics, and so I say, hey, you know, if you can't do anything about your genetics, don't focus there. Focus on those environmental factors that if you have the information, you know what you're up against. The consumers, the decision makers, you know, the moms of the world who are looking after everybody, they can take the steps they need to take to make sure that their families are safe.
Heather, we have to take a short break. When we come back, I want you to wrap it all up and put a little bow on it, this environmental nightmare that is unfolding around us. So many examples. That last one from Oxford County, three cases of cancer in the last few months in one small community. This warning about what algae, blue-green algae blobs, are doing to our drinking supply, and the mass killing of our honeybees. I wonder if you can find a common thread. We'll talk about it in just a moment. Right here on London Today on News Talk 1290 CJBK. I wanted to talk to you about this play that you're in this weekend. What a cute name. Tell me the name.
To Be or Not to Be.
What is happening with the bees? For people who don't know, what is happening to our bees?
They're dying in record numbers, and we got to stop it. And also monarch butterflies are dying, too. And it's just a problem that we need to start thinking about.
Do we ever? And of course, we have seen a lot of media coverage very recently about how the bees are dying, not only here in southwestern Ontario, but literally in countries around the world, all linked to a pesticide called neonicotinoids, which has been banned in some other parts of the world. We're going to focus our entire next hour on this issue. And the voice you just heard is that of a young actress who's in that play this weekend. The theme this morning, clearly, environmental disasters happening around us. The front page story in the Free Press this morning, welcome to our nightmare and waiting about the big blob of algae in Lake Erie and the effects of it. The bees, of course, the second issue. We heard about cancer in a small community in Oxford County from Brian Bicknell on CTV News last night. Heather Gingrich is a chemist and a, she's working on her PhD. How's that coming, by the way, Heather?
Oh, it's fun. Oh, my gosh, it's slow because I've got kids in tow, right? I have three school-age children, and they're my first priority.
As a medical geologist, but more importantly, as a mom, Heather, what do you make of all of these environmental disasters that are happening, especially being a mom?
You know what? I see it more as an opportunity. I think it's great that awareness is being raised. I'm sorry that it's scary, but that's how humans work, right? We really don't pay attention until we do, right? So here's what I'm advocating. I'm saying don't wait until it happens to you. Take control of your destiny now and protect your family so that we can turn the corner. Like I say, for me, it took my entire family dying of cancer to really, really look into this as if my life depended on it, because I felt that it did. So, I mean, everybody else, you know, I'm a little extreme, sure, whatever, and I have a different, you know, I have very specific training, but everybody has common sense. Everybody wants to do what's best for their family. And so you can do that. I mean, we have lots of ways with the internet to get information. Once you get the information, now you have to know how to use it to get the kind of policy changes you need to see. And that's really what it comes down to here.
Okay, in the 2 minutes we have left, let me ask you this. The two problems we're dealing with this morning, the incredible algae problem in Lake Erie and the bee problem. Let's talk about the algae problem first. How serious and what do we need to do?
Well, it's not just the algae. It's very, very, very serious, but it's not just the algae. So don't make the same mistake we made in Walkerton by focusing on only one contaminant. So, you know, let's look at all of them. Let's find out everything that's in there, and then we can prioritize, and then we can actually have an organized plan to deal with our problems. So how do you find out what's in your air, food, and water? Great question. Okay, there's basically two ways you can go about doing this. You can, do some really great citizen science, you know, by partnering with your local educational institutions like your high schools, your schools, your universities, and your colleges. There are experts there who have students that they're trying to teach how to do things right, who it doesn't even really cost you anything. You just have to provide them a place and be nice to them, maybe feed them and put them up if they need places to stay, and say, hey, we have a problem here. We would like somebody with some expertise to come look at it, because those students need experience and credit hours. Almost any college or university is dying for real-life projects to set their students loose on. And those professors are credible experts. And then the other way you can come at it, and this is by far my favorite, is partnering with your local First Nations. Oh, my goodness, they're indigenous science. And the way that First Peoples see the world and their environment and the connection and the understanding that they have, really, I got to say, the closest thing that we have in Western science is quantum physics. They know the answer. All the questions we're having right now, you can learn a lot and get an answer in a very short amount
of
time.
Okay, we're almost out of time. Segue us into our next segment, which is about the bees. How serious is the genocide that's happening to our bees, and how do we fix it?
It's serious. Same sort of deal, because we don't know what's causing it, but so we have to look at everything. Like I said, the place where I get my honey from locally, they had 48 hives. They're now down to 2. They've gone out of business. Never mind the fact that I can't get my honey, you know, for my coffee in the morning. These are major pollinators. If you think food is expensive now, you just wait till you don't have any pollinators to pollinate it. The price of food is going to go through the roof. So, again, it's the same thing as with the water. You know, you want to find out what's in your food and your air and the chemicals that get, because it all ends up in the water and the environment anyway. If you want to control that, you need to find out what's being used. You have to find a way to monitor and regulate how it's being used.
Absolutely. Heather, we are out of time. Heather Gingrich, medical geologist from Ingersoll. As I always say, I wish we had more time.
There's never enough time.
No, thank you so much, but we'll have you back again, Heather. Thank you so much for this.
Sounds great. Thanks, Andy.
Okay, 10 o'clock news coming up next. On the other side, an 11-year-old child. Really? Young lady? From Lester B. Pearson School for the Arts, who tells it like it is about bees. She stars in a play this weekend called To Be or Not to Be, and boy, does she have a honey of a story for us. It is time to wake up about this problem, which is killing our bees. We'll talk about it throughout the next hour. And then our 11 o'clock hour, a lockdown at one of our London schools yesterday because of a very troubled young man. All coming up right here on London Today on News Talk 1290 CJBK.
Here's Andy Udman.
Like I said, the place where I get my honey from locally, they had 48 hives. They're now down to 2. They've gone out of business. So, you know, never mind the fact that I can't get my honey, you know, for my coffee in the morning. These are major pollinators. If you think food is expensive now, you just wait till you don't have any pollinators to pollinate it. The price of food is going to go through the roof.
I wanted to talk to you about this play that you're in this weekend. What a cute name. Tell me the name.
To Be or Not to Be.
What is happening with the bees? For people who don't know, what is happening to our bees?
They're dying in record numbers, and we got to stop it. And also monarch butterflies are dying too, and it's just a problem that we need to start thinking about.
Well, as I sometimes say, when there's a particularly disturbing topic we're going to tackle, fasten your seatbelts, folks, because there is turbulence ahead. In our last hour, we looked at one environmental nightmare, what's happening in Lake Erie, with Free Press reporter Jonathan Scherer and medical geologist in Ingersoll, Heather Gingrich, warning this is very, very serious, what is happening to our water supply and the health effects we're already seeing, especially for pregnant women and babies. From there, we move to, and sorry if we're sounding like the bugler of the apocalypse on this one, but these problems are very, very real. Joining me this morning, Pam Killeen. We have talked, Pam, about these problems for years, but now the chickens are coming home to roost. What's happening to our bees?
They're dying off in droves, unfortunately. And over in Europe, of course, they've just voted for a 2-year restriction on what are known as the neonicotinoids, or neonics, as the abbreviation would go. And so there are over 30 separate scientific studies that have found a link between these neonics. And these neonics, what they're doing is they're attacking the insects' nervous systems. And so they're getting very disoriented and being exposed to these pesticides. Neonics are essentially, it's a treatment that is being done to the actual seed. And the intention, of course, is to act as a pesticide. But unfortunately, it's overreaching its boundaries and adversely influencing the bees.
We gave the farmers a pretty good noogie in our last hour because of the phosphorus running off their farms into Lake Erie, causing the problems with the algae. The farmers are at the heart of this one.
Mm-hmm, they are. And a lot of the farmers in this area, in this province, are growing these crops. Generally, they would be things like soy or corn, where these seeds have been treated with this pesticide.
It's going to be quite an hour, folks. We have a number of people, guests, and one 11-year-old girl who you're going to meet in just a moment. But Pam, let's start with our two guests in studio this morning. Introduction, if you will.
Mm-hmm. Well, one of our guests this morning is Katie Quinn, and she's the writer and the director of this play that Claire is in, and it's called To Be or Not to Be, and it's going to be held at the Western Fair Market this weekend at around 1 o'clock. It's part of the Look Fest. Katie is a very accomplished actress and a playwright, and she has taken to heart this issue, and she's decided to put on this play in order to share the message and the warnings that our bees are giving us today. So good morning, Katie. And Oliver Hobson is here as well, and he's a member of the Ag Committee that is looking at this issue. And I saw Oliver and Katie both at this Ag Committee meeting last week. So,
well, let's get a little history, mm-hmm. Oliver, if you would. This committee that you're on, tell me about how it came to be.
Well, it's the Agricultural Advisory Committee with the City of London. It was born in 1993 when the city took in rural areas for tax purposes, I'm guessing, and a committee was needed in order to represent have an agricultural voice at the municipal table. So that's how it was born. Things are continually developing. Urban agriculture is a big topic now.
How high on the list of priorities of your committee is this problem with the bees?
It's pretty high in terms of community response. I mean, I haven't. This is the third meeting with the Agricultural Advisory Committee that I've sat on. There were probably about 25 members of the community, the urban agricultural community, that were in the room, and I don't think there's been that much business seen at that committee table in a long time. So it was quite interesting to see the interface between those two things.
Let me just say a word to Katie Quinn. Sorry. Katie, I've just been looking at your resume. It's I'd need an hour to read through it. I mean, you're a very accomplished actress and playwright. But let me ask you about this young lady we're about to meet, who I talked to this morning, Claire, 11 years old.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
Yes, she is a very interesting child, and she came with us. She came with me to the meeting at the town hall, and she actually performed part of her monologue there for the committee. And she urgently requested that we work together to solve this problem with the bees.
Okay, now she wants to be an actress.
Oh yes.
But
yes.
What struck me in the conversation, which we're about to hear, is how passionate she is on this subject of the bees.
Oh yes, she is very passionate about the environment. She loves trees very much. In fact, her teacher shared with me that one day Claire went up to her and said, "Oh, Miss Chestnut, you know, you're just like me. You love trees just as much as I do." Yes.
Absolutely. Well, let's hear from Claire. I want to tell you, folks, we had this conversation because Claire's in school right now. She's 11 years old, and no excuses. I mean, she didn't meet President Obama and get an excuse to get out of school like you've seen in the news the last couple of days. That has happened to other children. No, Claire's in school. But listen to the conversation that we had a little earlier this morning about the play that she's in this weekend, To Be or Not To Be, but not just the play, the issue of what is happening to our bees. Good morning, Claire. How are you?
Good. How are you?
By my watch, it's 7:31. You're up early this morning.
Yes, I guess so.
Listen, I wanted to talk to you about this play that you're in this weekend. What a cute name. Tell me the name.
To Be or Not To Be.
Isn't that a great name?
Yeah, it's cute.
It's cute, but it also tells the story. What's the story of the play, Claire?
Well, in my play, my character, a young girl, appears in a dream sequence in the year 2030. The girl is the last human left on Earth after pesticides destroyed the bee population, followed by the human food supply, and eventually the human population. My character is leaving a final video message in hopes that one day somehow humans will evolve again and we'll live differently. We'll learn from the mistakes of the past.
Wow, that's a pretty dark play.
Yeah, it's... Yeah, it has some light moments, too.
Right, but Claire, let me just ask you, in just a moment, I know you want to share a part of the play with me, but...
Yes.
What's the story? What's the message here, Claire?
I think probably, like, if the bees are being affected, then other things must be affected too, like our water supply or crops. I think if there's any doubt about this pesticide, we should stop using it until we have all the answers.
Tell me about, you know, we've seen so many stories on the news, and here on News Talk 1290 CJBK, we've done a number of stories on how the bees are dying. Well, what is your impression of what is happening?
I think that the businesses who make the pesticides, who are controlling it, I really at least think they need to think about the future and about the effect of it.
Now, let me ask you, what is your understanding? What is happening with the bees? For people who don't know, what is happening to our bees?
They're dying in record numbers, and we
we got to stop it. And also monarch butterflies are dying, too. And it's just a problem that we need to start thinking about.
How did you first come across this problem and get involved in this play? Is this something you've been learning in school, or where did you get your information?
Yeah, well, I'm really excited to be working with Katie Quinn on her play To Be or Not to Be, because she wrote it, and it is at my school. So they auditioned it at my school, and I got in. So
what's the name of your school?
Lester B. Pearson School for the Arts.
I know it well. We all do.
Yeah. It's happening at the Eco Arts Festival on Saturday around the Western Fair.
Okay.
Yeah. But the, yeah, it's part of the whole festival.
Okay. Now, you plan to you would like to share a portion of the play with us. Are you ready to do that?
Yes, I am.
Okay. By the way, have you acted before, Claire?
Yes, I have, actually. I love to act, so I recently worked with Drayton Entertainment on two shows, The Sound of Music and Oliver. So that was really a great experience, and I also love to play the violin and sing and dance.
Who did you play in The Sound of Music?
I played Brigitta.
Which is the youngest child or the second youngest child?
The third youngest.
The third youngest. Terrific. I saw the play. That was marvelous. Wow.
Oh, good. Thank you.
Yes, I did. And I also saw Oliver. So wonderful.
Oh, well, that's good.
Yes.
11 years old, and she's rhyming off the plays she's been in. Pam, what were you doing when you were 11?
I wasn't advocating for the bees, that's for sure.
Katie, she is amazing.
Yes, she is a very special child. I feel lucky to be working with her. Actually, all the children in the production are very interesting children, very talented and well-spoken, articulate, and passionate. It's been a great experience.
Well, we could do a show on her career, but we're talking about bees this morning, and she's very passionate about that. Pam, we have a caller, Roy Alleman, who is
Roy Alleman, yes. He's a beekeeper, so I thought it would be a good idea to speak right at the grassroots level about this subject. Good morning, Roy.
Good morning. How are you doing?
Great.
Roy, I want to share with you that when I was a kid in Alveson, we had the Monroe apiaries, and it was my nightmare. I used to have dreams about this, that the word apiary would appear on a spelling test.
Yeah, it's a tough one for a child.
Roy, you have a crisis happening in the bee industry. Tell us about it.
We do. We have been hit fairly hard, especially in the last couple of years, beekeepers, especially in southern Ontario, and most particularly in the Corn Belt. So the area probably between Brantford and London have been hit very hard, and it looks like a lot of fingers are pointing towards neonicotinoids.
Okay, let's take this one portion, one issue at a time. First of all, how big the problem is and what the source of it is, and then how we fix it. How big is the problem? How many bees are dying? How badly does it threaten your industry?
It's tough to say how many bees are dying. A lot of beekeepers aren't reporting their losses, but we're probably looking at losses in around a 30 to 40% rate per year. And a normal year would be somewhere in the vicinity of 10 to 20%.
Why would the beekeepers not be reporting the problem?
Well, a lot of smaller ones wouldn't be. Part of the problem is because these pesticides don't always kill right away, that beekeepers, and I've experienced this too, is that you could end up getting summer losses very slowly, and because there are sublethal effects of these pesticides.
Okay, I've seen some of these beekeepers being interviewed, for example, on Canada AM on CTV, and literally I was shocked because they were in tears. I mean,
some of these guys, like some of the more unfortunate ones, have been close to wiped out.
Wow. Hmm. Well, we heard the reference, Pam, from Heather Gingrich, mm-hmm. Where she gets her honey in Ingersoll. Mm-hmm. They had 40-some hives, and they're down to two. Is that how bad it is in some cases, Roy?
In some cases, yeah. You got beekeepers out there that are losing 80, 90% plus of their hives, depending on where they're located. Now, I'm fairly fortunate in that where I keep my hives, south of Brantford, there's a lot of mixed cropping. So there is corn in this area. There are neonicotinoids that are in use.
Is there any question in your mind what the cause of this genocide is?
No. No. Pesticides are a leading major cause in my mind. What I experienced last spring, I came out of the winter really strong in 2012, had a lot of swarms, caught the swarms, was able to expand quite well into the spring. Now, about a week or two after the corn planting season, my hives started experiencing queen die-offs. All of a sudden, I had queens missing, queens disappearing. And when that happens, what you experience is a lot of your worker bees begin, their ovaries become active. They begin laying eggs. The eggs are unfertilized, and they only produce drones. So I had close to 40% of my hives that this happened in. Mm-hmm. And that's what I'm talking about with sublethal doses. That hives didn't die, but what happened is apparently these nicotinoids in low doses over time can shut down the queen's ovaries.
I wish we had a lot more time to get into all the details. Let me ask you this. Yeah. How do we fix it?
Well, very first, we should do something like Europe where we put a moratorium, a short-term ban, whether it be 1 year or 2 years, on the nicotinoids and get a lot more testing done. The testing that they're doing recently is exposing a lot of faults with the nicotinoids. It's obviously a leading factor in the cause of bee decline and other insects as well.
We have a new premier. She says the portfolio of agriculture is so important that she has taken that on personally. I haven't heard her hinting at any immediate ban of neonicotinoids.
No, they haven't. They are currently, the PMRA is taking comments, has opened the floor for comments, and a lot of beekeepers, of course, now are putting their comments in saying that they want to get this banned.
Well, since you mentioned the PMRA, that's the Pest Management Regulatory Agency of Health Canada, it indeed has confirmed the link between widespread bee kills in 2012 and the use of these pesticides on corn plantings in Ontario. So there you have it.
Correct. And they have, and which is a breath of fresh air, but what they haven't done is banned it.
Okay.
Wow. Any sign of that happening?
Not immediately, but I certainly hope it does happen.
You need it yesterday.
Yes, exactly. And like I said, it's not just the bee populations, but there's a lot of other insects are going to be affected.
Wow. Roy, thank you for your time. I wish we had more time. Pam, just before we go to the bottom of the hour, this is such a serious crisis. Does the average person know about this?
No, I don't think people do. I think a few years ago when this started happening, the colony collapse disorder, in the media, they were quoting Einstein. Do you remember that quote, Andy? Where he said, if the bee disappeared off the face of the earth, man would only have 4 years left to live. So a lot of that was being repeated among the masses, I would say.
But just before we go to the bottom of the hour, Katie Quinn is in studio this morning, actress and playwright. She's written a play, To Be or Not to Be. What prompted this, Katie?
I had a conversation with a local beekeeper at the Covent Garden Market who explained to me the problem with the neonicotinoid pesticides. And I was so shocked by exactly what you were saying, Pam, of the danger that the disappearance of the bee represents to the survival of the human race. And I wanted to find an issue that children could connect with deeply. And children love animals and bees, and this was a perfect topic. And, of course, children are our future, and to act against their best interests is a crime against them and against humanity.
Absolutely.
In general.
We have to break for a news update. When we come back, we'll play you just a short portion of the play. Claire, reading her lines, does she lift those lines off the page or what? And then we'll continue our discussion. This genocide of our bee population, a major problem not only here but around the world. Some countries have already taken dramatic action. We may see it here soon, or will we? All depends on your reaction, folks, because as we know, politicians don't read their mail. They just weigh it. We'll be back with more in just a moment right here on London Today on News Talk 1290 CJBK. I wanted to talk to you about this play that you're in this weekend. What a cute name. Tell me the name.
To Be or Not to Be.
What is happening with the bees? For people who don't know, what is happening to our bees?
They're dying in record numbers, and we got to stop it. And also monarch butterflies are dying too, and it's just a problem that we need to start thinking about.
Oh, do we ever. It's a problem that we need to start thinking about. Folks, there's a play in London, if you have just joined us, which is going to be presented involving a number of children. It points to a huge, huge problem that we're having in, with our environment, and that is our bees are dying en masse. It is literally a holocaust, a genocide, and it threatens the world's source of food at so many levels. In studio this morning, not only Pam Colleen, but also Katie Quinn, who is a very accomplished actress and playwright. And Katie, I wonder if you would be so kind to set up, I mean, you wrote this play, To Be or Not to Be. We've just met the actress, the young actress, 11 years old, rhyming off the play she's already starred in. Would you set this up for us? Mm-hmm. I talked to this young lady at 7:30 this morning, and she actually read some of the lines from the play. If you would set it up for us.
Okay. The story of the play is told through the dream vision of a young girl, Nava, who travels to the court of the queen bee and learns how the bees are dying. And at the end of her dream in the play, Nava sees a young girl, Hannah. Claire is playing Hannah. And Hannah is the only human left alive after the bees have died and our food supply is gone to pot. And Hannah is leaving a final message for the future, and this is Hannah's monologue that Claire is performing.
Listen to an 11-year-old girl lift lines off a page at 7:30 in the morning to some talk show host. Here we go.
I wish we could have done something before it was too late. I wish the grown-ups had cared about more than just their own selves. Us kids, we never got to do any living. We just barely started to figure out what it meant to be on this planet, to be a human. I think the people who were in charge never figured out how to be a human being. We should have loved each other. We should have forgiven each other. I would give anything, anything, just to see another human face. The bees enter. The bees! You survived! I can't believe it! This means there might be hope. Hope for this planet. It's too late for us, but maybe one day humans will evolve again, and maybe this time we'll get it right. We'll not just live in peace, but in love. Love with our beautiful planet and with one another. We'll see that it was us, not cars or TV or money, that was the most valuable thing in existence. It was us. It was us the whole time. I'm tired. I think I'll just lay down for a little bit and rest. You bees, keep watch, okay? You keep watch. There it is.
Wow. That is awesome. Awesome. You love acting, don't you?
Yes, I do.
Well, good for you. I'll tell you, acting leads to good things. I was in a high school play. And I was really shy. I'm sure that you've never been that way, but I was really shy, and I was in a few plays, and someone said maybe you should go into radio. What's your career plan, Clara?
I want to be an actress, definitely, and I'm taking training for dance because of it. So, because you basically need all the art skills to be in those performances or keep getting into them. So, yeah, I'm doing all kinds of different dancing, singing and playing my violin, right? And lots of acting. So, yeah.
Let me just ask you before I let you go. How does this, what's happening to the bees, make you feel? And how important is it that we listen to the message of this play?
I really think that, I mean, it's a bit discouraging to think that people are actually, like, putting this pesticide into the air and killing all these bees. And they're just, I mean, I'm a kid, right? But they're just innocent little bees. That's not the big part of it, though. But what it's going to affect our planet. Like, I think what the play is trying to explain is that it goes beyond just the bees. Like, it affects, our water supply and crops and so many vegetables and fruits, and that prevents cancer. So I think that we really need to think about that. And I think the good thing is that more people care about the environment than people who don't. So I think that's the good thing about it.
From an 11-year-old girl, can you believe it? I want to go directly to the president of the Ontario Beekeepers Association, Dan Davidson, who's been on the line. Dan, I dare you to speak more eloquently and with more impact than that 11-year-old girl.
Yeah, good luck, eh?
Dan, you were telling me that there's a working group and that you've been in discussions with Kathleen Wynne on this issue.
Yeah, well, not directly with the premier, but she has set up a working group, and it involves different parties, one of them being the Ontario Beekeepers Association, the chemical industry, which is obviously heavily involved in this situation, the Ontario Grain Farmers, and OFA, Ontario Federation of Agriculture, and a lot of different OMAFRA specialists, crop specialists, and our provincial apiarist. Yeah, we're trying to find some common ground, which is, of course, difficult, but...
Dan, what's the position that the chemical companies are taking?
Yeah, the chemical companies are, at first, you know, when this first started, they were denying that this would have any part of doing anything to the bees.
Denial is not just a river in Egypt.
No, that's right. And but now they've seemed to come a little ways. I mean, it's obviously they don't want to lose any of their market, so they're not going to, you know, come out and make too many bold comments.
Now, the farmers are in the middle of this. What's the position they're taking?
Yeah, the farmers are coming around too. Like they love these seed insecticides. They're quite easy for them to use, and it's pretty well guaranteed that they're going to control the insects. But they are realizing that not every acre needs them, which was happening. They were just basically getting overused and used where there was no insect pressures in the soil, and they seem to be coming around now to understand that only use it when it is needed.
Are you hopeful, Dan? We don't have a lot of time. Are you hopeful that we're going to see some action now, and what form will that action take?
Yeah, well, obviously the best action for a beekeeper is for these systemic insecticides to be banned, and that would clean up everything on our end.
Is there any sign that could happen?
Well, anything could happen. I mean, it's going to take a strong person to make that decision.
Kathleen Wynne?
Yes.
The agriculture minister?
Yes, it doesn't seem like it's going to happen at the federal level, so that's we're hoping.
And you've got 40,000 names on a petition that people can sign. I suppose they can find that petition on your website, OntarioBee.com?
Yep, there's a link to it on our website, and if people are concerned about this situation, that's definitely a way they can help out, is to put their name on our petition.
Dan, we thank you for your time. A short break, we'll be back to wrap this all up, to see how you can plug into this absolutely critical issue. Our bees are dying. It is a holocaust. It is a genocide. It's a problem we need to deal with very, very quickly. We'll be back in just a moment right here in London today on News Talk 1290 CJBK. I wanted to talk to you about this play that you're in this weekend. What a cute name. Tell me the name.
To Be or Not to Be.
What is happening with the bees? For people who don't know, what is happening to our bees?
They're dying in record numbers, and we got to stop it. And also monarch butterflies are dying, too. And it's just a problem that we need to start thinking about.
Do we ever? And that's why we're spending this entire hour, folks, talking about this, a problem with the bees. Let me just get a very short 10-second comment from each of you on what's happening with our bees and where it's all going to lead, Pam.
Well, I'm very concerned, not just for the bees, but as Claire mentioned, of course, we've even seen in the media recently about the decline in the population of the monarch butterflies. So clearly there's an impact on the ecology in general, and I think that we need to take more responsible actions over what we're putting out into the environment. We can't just all be guinea pigs here, you know, just put out these chemicals and see what happens. So there needs to be more of the precautionary principle, for example, that needs to be applied here.
Katie, you obviously feel so passionately about this. You've written a play, the play that's going to be on this weekend, which we're going to focus on in just a moment, To Be or Not to Be. And to me, that sounds like this has become very personal for you.
Yes, I'm very concerned about the world that we are leaving for future generations and for the children who are living right now. We in this room, we're having a great life, but what's going to happen in 20, 40, 50 years when all of these issues, the ozone problem, global warming, when these things come to a head, what's going to happen for these children who are alive now?
Oliver Hobson, your perspective on this.
Well, it's a bit of a desperate situation. It's very sad for a lot of people, for the farmers that are invested in the machinery and spent their money and bet the farm on this particular model of doing business. It will be discussed again. I mean, farmers are different from agribusiness people. That's a very important point. And the people that sit on the Agricultural Advisory Committee are good farmers. So in the process of having this this engagement and discussion at the municipal level, civil commentary input is really, really encouraged, is very welcomed. So if you want to find out what's happening and pursue this discussion further, you'd be best off calling City Hall and speaking with Betty Mercier, who is the committee's secretary, and get yourselves on the agenda and get your views on the table. So that telephone number.
Yes, go ahead.
It's 519-661-2500, and you can either press 0 and speak with the operator and get put through to Betty, or extension 0835. So there are a number of options. I'd encourage you to get involved, stick up for urban agriculture, stick up for the bees, and stick up for good farming.
And there's meetings coming up too, right? Potentially a meeting in December, Oliver? A follow-up meeting on this issue?
There is. There was a call for a moratorium put on the table at the last meeting, and the preference of the committee was to delay until more information is made available.
Obviously, the more support you can get, the better. But what are you how are you directing all this energy in the community on this issue? What are you hoping to accomplish?
Well, there's urban agriculture is something that's very much a part of the community conversation, and it's happening in Toronto. There's much discussion, positive discussion going on in
Toronto.
What
is urban agriculture?
Well, some people might describe it as community gardening on steroids, but probably not really a good. it's agriculture is pretty much defined by if you sell $7,000 worth of goods in a year, then you can describe yourself as a farm, and you'd be able to get a sort of taxed appropriately in that regard.
Do we have any beehives in the city proper?
We do. We've got some very forward-thinking, innovative businesses that are in the city. There's a restaurant in downtown. Windermere Manor's done a fantastic job. They've got hives there, and they send their honey off to St. Thomas and include it as part of in the beer-making process. And they sell a lovely brew there called Honey Stung Ale, so I'd recommend that you
Where do they keep the hives?
It's on the property there. It's in Innovation Park, and they're doing a lot of positive stuff. So urban agriculture is in the community. It is being practiced. And it's probably time that the legislators need to start acknowledging that there are jobs here. They're not the big flashy, we've got 500 jobs on a turnkey basis. Sometimes you've got to really get down and start freeing up and making the legislation a little more permissive so people can get on and keep positively occupied and keep engaged. And I think that's urban agriculture is a way forward on that.
I want to turn to the play, Katie. The play is this weekend. Let's focus on it for just a moment.
Mm-hmm.
Where, when, format?
Yes, the play will be performed at the Bandshell that is outside behind the farmer's market at the Western Fair. It's going to begin around 1:30, possibly a little bit earlier, 1:15. Penn Kemp is doing a live poetry reading at the same, like around from 1 to 1:30, so we don't want to interrupt her poetry. Yes.
Now, the farmers, this is at the farmer's market. Are the farmers supportive of the play?
I'm not sure. I'm not in contact with any farmers right now. I haven't talked to any of them about the play.
Let's talk about the farmers, Pam, for just a moment. It really shocked me when Heather Gingrich, who joined us earlier, said where she gets her honey in the Ingersoll area, a farmer had 48 hives. He's down to two.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
two.
I think the writing is on the wall. When we're looking at Europe, of course, putting a two-year moratorium on using the neonicotinoids, I think we need to pay attention to what they have decided over in Europe. And unfortunately, we're dilly-dallying over here. I think that the writing is on the wall. I think the research has been done, and people are ignoring the research.
We don't have the courage in Ontario, whether it's a seatbelt issue, the smoking issue, to be the leader. We let everybody else in the world lead on this issue. But this issue demands immediate action.
I think so. I think we can learn from the Europeans. The research has been done. There's over 30 separate scientific studies that have found a link between the neonics and the damage that's being done to the bees. And then we have, in March 2013, the American Bird Conservancy published a review of 200 studies showing a link between the damaging effects of the neonics on birds, aquatic invertebrates, and other wildlife. And so,
Let me get a comment on this, Oliver, possibly you on this one, or whoever wants to chime in on this. Let's take a best case scenario. Say Kathleen Wynne this afternoon at 3 o'clock announces that she's been listening to this show, so overwhelmed by the evidence that we have an immediate ban on neonicotinoids. How quickly would that fix the problem?
Well, it's arguably there's some of the comments that we've heard at the committee is that there would be that'd have to be replacements found, that'd have to be other things employed that might be worse for the bees. So what do you do in terms of whether it's an absolute solution? I it's part of a broader issue as far as I'm concerned, and that is. This is urban agriculture for me, and I'm coming at it from an urban agricultural context. In terms of the fight that goes on between the province and the federal government and the agribusiness industry, it would be nice to be for people to just get on and allow to proceed in the manner that they want to in an urban agricultural context and let those guys take lumps off one another.
You're going to have beehives in your backyard? Time.
Probably not. I'd have to go and speak with my neighbors about that.
Yeah, no kidding. We've had so much input on this program. I do want to squeeze in one caller. We haven't provided the opportunity. Nick, you'll have to be quick.
Certainly, I can do that. First of all, I'd like to thank you and Pam for all the wonderful work you guys do in raising awareness on these issues. And I'd like to say hi to Oliver as well. I'm a friend of his. Urban agriculture is certainly part of the solution, but from my understanding, it's not just the neonicotinoid pesticides that are responsible for bee colony collapse. In fact, I've read articles that summarize that it was, in fact, all of the pesticides we use in conjunction with each other that have a profound effect. I mean, even Bayer in Europe, which is suing the European government, claiming that their ban on neonicotinoids is unrepresentative, is using this information as part of their case.
Nick, we have to leave it there. I'm so sorry because we are out of time. Quick word from each of you, Oliver. What are you saying? Get involved?
I will definitely get involved. It's important. It's an important issue at the municipal table. It affects directly our local area. These are our people that are suffering out there, and we need to pick up the phone, make the calls, and get engaged.
Perfect. Katie, the play this weekend, worth the price of admission just to see this 11-year-old girl.
Actually, it's free, so come on out, and there's going to be lots of live music and food and different vendors from 10 in the morning until 6 p.m. at the Look Fest.
Which do you enjoy more, acting or coaching talent like this talent?
I think I love both equally, but it is a very special opportunity to see a young person develop and grow. It's wonderful.
Pam?
And I think we should probably guide people to Katie's. Do you have a website, Katie, so people can look up more information about you or the play?
It's on the Lookfest website.
Okay.
So just type in Lookfest in Google.
Do you want to announce your email, perhaps?
Sure. My email is ktq92@gmail.com. That's CAITYQ92@gmail.com.
Awesome. Well, I'm going to be there on Saturday, so I look forward to it.
Okay, great. Terrific. Thank you all. Wow, what an eye-opener. 11 o'clock news. On the other side of the news,